Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. Comic books, specifically.
Oh, comics.
I know, just to clarify what's going on here. Oh, did you read a bunch of novels this week?
Yeah, let me put my copy of Moby Dick down. This is just...
Oh, boy. Well Too Big. That's my review. Great cover.
The whale too
it's
big.
Worth it for the whale alone.
Oh, my God.
All right,
gosh.
Why don't we get into these comic books, because there's lots of great ones to talk about. Kicking it off with Absolute Batman, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Nick Dragotta. In the last issue, Bruce was investigating Ark M, a strange facility off the side of Gotham City, and was attacked by the huger-than-usual Bane. This issue finds him imprisoned in Ark M and slowly broken emotionally and physically by Bane, as Bane is wont to do, leading to some shocking changes to several characters we followed thus far. Pete, you're given the devil horns. I believe you may have liked this book.
This is a fucking blast, man. Oh my God, this is so badass. This is just, I mean, do you want to see heavy metal Batman fuck shit up? This is the comic, man. I just can't believe how much fun I'm having reading this comic. The art is insane. It's perfect for this version of Batman. Damn, I love this comic. It continues to be just such a great kind of vibe. And I feel like people are going to be talking about this run for years to come. This is just, this is glorious.
What I really liked about this issue is we saw Batman get beaten up by Black Mask in the first arc, and that's fine. But it feels so much more palpable here where he has lost and he doesn't know he's lost. He keeps thinking he's going to win and he keeps losing over and over again, which is what this book is all about. And what's working about this book that we've talked about a lot is even as they change and tweak the characters, they stay true to the core of them. And the core of Bane is, despite his hulking size, he actually is very smart. He is a planner. He is somebody who looks forward and enjoys slowly breaking somebody down. That was leading in the comics to breaking the back of Batman, but that's become something that's really evolved over time into that's what he likes to do. And that's exactly what he's doing here. Not only that, we get, like I said, some really big changes, specifically to Bruce, that I'm really curious, because this book has a anything-goes sensibility, whether they're going to keep with it. You know, I'm dancing around the spoilers here, and I will put like a blanket spoiler warning for all the books we're going to talk about. But there's a thing that happens in this book that intrinsically changes the physicality of Bruce Wayne, which in a normal Batman book, I'd be like, I'll be fine by the next arc. Here, I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going to happen to him. And that's always a very exciting place to be. Last but not least, just got to wrap this up, I'll say Nick Dragotta is crushing it on this book every issue, really pushing himself harder and harder. Fantastic stuff.
It's all that and then some. But also, like, I love that scene where they're like, the doctors are kind of examining his body, and they're like, we found all these hidden compartments where he has stashed, like, all these different, it brought me so much joy. This is just such a cool idea that is so well executed, and God, I'm having so much fun.
Imperial, number 2 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Federico Vincentini and Ivan Coelho. This is the second of 4 parts. The big cosmic event where Jonathan Hickman is remaking the fabric of Marvel's outer galaxies. There were a bunch of murders in the first issue, and this issue, everybody in the galaxy is gunning for the Wakandans, but we as the readers know they're not behind it. They, in fact, have been framed. We find out a lot more about that this issue. There's some big power struggles and changes by the end here, as well as more of a tease of who the big villain is behind it. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, this is action-packed, and a lot goes down in this issue, but also cool cover. It kind of reminds me a little bit of those Civil War covers where they had those black or just like those solid cover parts on it. And but anyways, yeah, oh, man, Black Panther fighting two Hulks? I mean, I didn't want that to end. I wanted more of that. There's just so much war, so much going on. This is such this is really kind of getting into it and get going, and this is good. And I cannot wait to read what's coming next, and the art is amazing.
A couple of things that I really liked about this. It was very chaotic at the beginning, and I think purposefully so, because we were thrust into the middle of an enormous battle scene. But once it really settled down and focused on the characters, I really appreciated, and this is a big spoiler here, but Shuri gets captured and held on the ship by Nova and Star-Lord. Yep. They are not being idiots. Like, there was a point to this book where I was like, all these people know each other, and I feel like somebody at some point could be like, hey, Wakandans, did you actually do this? And they'd be like, nope. And then you'd kind of move on from there. And that's almost exactly what happens in that conversation where they're like, I don't know, this seems a little weird, right? And start to figure out that something is wrong behind the scenes. So they're jamming through that quickly, which is great. And I agree with you on the Hulk thing. The moment when Black Panther... Because I don't know about you, like, you have a dog in the fight here, I think. When you come into this, you're like, that guy can beat that guy, which is a lot of what this is about. But once Black Panther pulls up with the contents, we're like, well, everybody's screwed. He is he has 1,000 Batmans in a Panther suit, so he's going to be, he has a million plans to beat them all already. And having Hulk and Amadeus show Joe up and be like, hello, it's just a great moment because you feel that like, oh, shit
is right. How's this going to go? How is this going to work? Because Cho is the smart Hulk. And now how's Black? Yeah, I mean, like, how are you going to? Yeah, so it's very exciting.
Yeah, at the beginning, I was harumphing a little bit and being like, I don't know about this. Are we just going to have nonstop space battles? This may be a little hard to follow. But by the end, I was all in. Do you have a theory? I had thrown out last issue that I felt like Loki and Games Master are behind this. I'm not 100% sure about the Loki thing anymore, though it probably is Games Master. But do you have any theories about
it's good, bad? It's got to be Games Master. I mean, put down the chess piece and, I mean, you know.
He's always sitting in space playing games.
So. Yeah, so.
Probably, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I would guess, yeah.
We'll see what happens. Next up, Star Trek Red Shirts, number one from IDW. Yes.
Now, this is probably the red block. You know what I mean? We go red coat, red shirt. You know what I mean? Like right back to back, right?
Oh, no. That's later on in the stack. I'm sorry. I shook him up a little bit. Okay. Star Trek Red Shirts, number one from IDW, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Megan Levins. Anybody who is a Star Trek fan, and I'm sure other folks know as well, that red shirts is a running joke with the Star Trek universe. Going back to the original series where anybody with a red shirt would go on an away mission and be like, oh, that guy's going to die. So the concept here is all of these red shirts are sent on a dangerous Suicide Squad style mission together. The thing that I was really surprised about with the series, particularly because I don't know if you read, I never pronounced his name right, but John Slazzi has a book called Red Shirts that is about this, that plays with it. It's very funny throughout. This is pretty serious.
The cover sets a tone. You know what I mean? And but I also love the idea of this. Like, we open on this guy, and it's like parents are all proud of him for making it through the academy and getting him. Like, you're a red shirt, bro. Like, don't celebrate too early. You know what I mean? But this is a well executed idea. I'm very scared about how this is going to go down, but. I love the start of this. Stakes are high. We know what happens with red shirts. So,
great way to come at it. I think for me, I need to get past. I was expecting this to be like a bunch of like, oops, they died. Isn't that funny thing? Yeah. So that's on me. Less so
all
than on the
deaths,
book.
Just constant like, oops, fell off the planet. Oops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's 100% not what it is. Like I said, it's like very much more of a Suicide Squad type thing. There's a lot of characters right now, so I do
It's going to whittle down, I have a feeling.
Yes, once that is, and once we can like focus in on a couple of characters a little harder, I think that'll grab me a little more. But like you said, interesting concept, curious to see where it goes.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Absolute Flash number 5 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by A.L. Kaplan. This issue, the Flash and little baby Gorilla Grodd are taking on a heat wave, one of the escaped experiments we got to see last issue. This is mostly a big battle scene in this issue, which I thought was interesting, though we do get some big revelations by the end. We haven't exactly been going back and forth on this, but I think this is one that's like sometimes sits towards the middle or bottom, at least when we're talking about Absolute books. So how are you feeling about this issue in particular?
Well, I'm enjoying this Flash more than I do normally enjoy Flash. So that says something. I really love the pace and the action level on this, but the impending doom is getting to me a little bit with the monkey, because it's like Grodd. But it's a young baby Grodd who's cute and adorable. And I'm just like, stop fucking getting close to this goddamn monkey, bro. This is
you don't trust the monkey.
No, you can't. It's Grodd, man. So, the impending doom of this. I mean, we're kind of,
maybe you'll be right. But I'm not getting impending doom. And the reason I'm not.
Oh, I'll throw out to you. A pet monkey with Grodd. Think about
Absolute Batman, where he's friends with all the villains. It's the same thing where, like, it's a new world and anything could happen.
All right.
Wow. All right.
Well, hey, man. A lot of times comics say it to us. It's a new world and anything can happen. All this new thing. Anything can happen. We still kind of end up at the same place. So, all right, but
just
I feel
in
like
this
Grodd's
issue of Absolute Batman,
Grodd.
Killer Croc got changed into a giant crocodile, and Batman rode him, which was amazing.
It was amazing.
So they're not enemies; they're friends. He's friends with a crocodile. So why can't Flash be friend with a monkey? Why can't they all have animal friends?
I have no problem with animal friends, but that's Gorilla Grodd. You know what
Killer
I mean?
Croc is also. Oh, you like it when Killer Croc dates people, though. I forgot about
yeah,
that.
I got a soft spot for Croc, so you're not going to get me with this example.
Mm-hmm. All right. Never mind. Why don't we move on and talk about another big lizard? Godzilla destroys the Marvel Universe, number 1 for Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Javier Garon. You've been reading all of the one-shots where Godzilla goes around and fights characters one-on-one, forget about those. This is a totally new continuity where Godzilla is attacking because of stuff the Mole Man did and the Fantastic Four are trying to stop him. There are some big things that go down with Marvel characters by the end here, and some new ones join the fray. Pete, you're the big Godzilla guy, so what do you think of this?
This is fun. This is a great setup, a fun cover, sets a good tone for this. Yeah, and I loved it. There was a lot of really funny moments in here. I loved when Ben Grimm broke into J. Jonah Jameson, or broke through J. Jonah Jameson's office and was like, oh man, Spider-Man tried the lizard serum and turned into a giant monster. JJ jumps up and is like, I knew it, just hysterical. The fact that, like, after Mole Man, Mr. Fantastic was like, everybody be quiet, nobody upset Godzilla. Mole Man zaps him, and Mr. Fantastic punches him in the face. Oh, that was great. So, I'm having a blast with this. I think this is a fun idea, and right now they're executing it well. It's in great hands, and the art is bright and fun.
To the point that you're making, I was surprised how comedy heavy this was versus the Red Shirts book. And again, this might just be adjusting my expectations, but given the title and the cover and everything, I was like, here we go. Going to be real serious destruction of the Marvel. Oh, no, it's not. Okay. All right.
Oh, no.
I did really like Javier Garon's art in here. It reminded me, it's not quite as extreme, but it reminded me a little bit of Aaron Cooter and, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name of the late great artist who did Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Big in Japan. It's nowhere near as exaggerated as his stuff. And I'm sorry, I'm not remembering his name. That book is fantastic, by the way. But But it's definitely like more cartoony than I was expecting. So there you go. This ends tonight, number one. This is part of our Duggan block from Image Comics, written by Jerry Duggan, Kelvin Mao, Robert Wibdom, art by Jay Lee. Now, if I remember correctly, this is three interlocking stories. You can see if you're watching the YouTube version from the cover here. We got a riff on The Bride from Kill Bill. It is very Tarantino inspired, where there are these three stories happening over one night in Vegas that crisscross and kind of affect each other a little way. This one is a absolute wild one with two women who are on a night out and maybe fairies get involved, possibly, or maybe not. I will say I was super excited to see Jay Lee on interiors here, because never does interiors, always covers, not interiors anymore. So that alone made the book worth it to me.
I'm sorry, Alex, are you saying it's worth it for the art alone?
I'm saying it's worth it for Jay Lee's art alone, for sure. Also, great cover.
Yeah, yeah, there's a couple great covers. I agree with you. I really think the art is the hero here, and it's unbelievable. The twists and turns got a little too much for me, but I love these main characters that we're dealing with, and the art is tripped out in all the right ways. And then, you know, like any good movie, they say the title a couple of times.
I could not believe how many times they said this tonight. I was like, right. the first time I was like, oh, cool. And kept saying it.
Yeah. I was like, I guess it's going to end tonight or better, because if we see another night, I'm going to be super pissed.
Yeah. Let's take a little nap and I'll see you tomorrow. And then it'll end this night. I am very curious to read the second issue of this because, like you said, it gets real weird in the last five pages or so.
I'm curious
whether, like, we're done with this story or we're going to get more illumination about it by the time we get to
Are we
going to
have a flashback to another night? You know what I mean?
Well, we're ostensibly going to be following, like, at certain points, they run through something else happening. They're like, but that's a story for another time. That story is going to be told in the next comic book. So my question is, are we going to get some clarification on what happens at the end of this issue in the next issue, or have we just moved on?
And I feel like we'll walk away from it and then come back to it. You know what I mean?
We'll see what happens. Yeah. Krypto, The Last Dog of Krypton, number two from DC Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Mike Norton. At the end of the last issue, this is telling a new origin for Krypto. Krypto was picked up by Lex Luthor, and Lex Luthor is a bad dog owner. Bad, bad, bad.
Bad person, I think we
bad
can
person.
Say.
Bad person. Yeah. Mm-mm. Pete. Yeah. You hate dogs and you like to hit them. What did you think?
What the hot the?
Whoa! I'm sorry. Was I not supposed to reveal your truth?
Oh, don't put that on me, you fucking asshole. That's not funny, man. I have here the this is sad, and it's not fun to watch Krypto get abused. I mean, after the movie, he's everybody's favorite, and this is just heartbreaking. I'm like, God, this is not a tie-in. This is the opposite of what the movie was doing. But spoilers, he gets free, and I felt really good about it. You know, I was worried he died.
This is a really
crazy,
intense issue that I'm not always the biggest fan of seeing, like, young Lex Luthor for whatever reason. It's just something that just doesn't hit me quite right. But, man, Ryan North makes him so interesting in this book. Upsettingly interesting and very negative, but a lot of that is tied into Mike Norton's style. And I said this for the first issue as well, but I just think he's really, like, evolved his art style in a way and refined it for this series in particular. So I've been really impressed with the images that Mike Norton has been putting in here. Ryan North makes something complicated and sad and figures out a way to make Krypto a hero while also pushing Lex Luthor forward emotionally. So really fascinating issue. I also didn't realize, I guess maybe this series is season themed, which is interesting as well. So this is the fall, and next we're going to get winter. So great series so far, but a hard read, particularly if you do not like watching animals get abused, which I feel like
trigger warning on that.
There's one guy listening out there is like, I love it. I love it. And it's you, Pete.
No, it's not.
Giant Size House of M, number one for Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing and Saladin Ahmed, art by Francesco Manna and Martin Coccolo. The front story is continuing Miss Marvel's journey through time. Now, per the title, she is in the House of M era, while Legion, or at least the powers of Legion, are trying to do something in the background. This is all leading up to the climax in Giant Size X-Men number 2, which comes out probably next week or the week after. I honestly don't know. And then we get a backup story featuring Wolverine from back in the day.
Hey, Wolverine.
How'd you feel about this, Pete?
Well, I thought the art was amazing. I thought the Peter David in memoriam was very touching. And I liked the kind of some of the things that happened in this. I thought the Wolverine backup was interesting. I think where it got to, I don't know, man. We have Scarlet Witch and Legion kind of doing their No More Mutants, and then we're like, oh shit, is there No More Mutants? And then it's like, oh, there's 198.
So no, but that was the decimation event. That's what happened there.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, so there's some left. But yeah, I don't know what the fuck is going on, but
I've been a little back and forth about this series of one shots. I think the idea of Miss Marvel exploring her mutant heritage through these different eras is interesting. There's some real fun stuff in this issue, like seeing Legion go head to head with Scarlet Witch was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool.
I wish we had gotten more of that because I really like the idea of that. That's a cool matchup and battle, not to turn this into wrestling, but sometimes it is. And there's some really funny moments at the end where Miss Marvel has decided, like, screw it, I don't care about the time stream anymore. And they're like, they figure out what they need to do. And they're like, but we'd have to travel back in time to fix this. And immediately she's like, Beast has a time machine. And he's like, huh? Oh, yeah, I was going to tell you guys eventually. That made me laugh out loud. And the last moment where she says, we have to go back to the future, and Wolverine's like Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I was that, yeah,
also very funny. So, like, I want a little more of that. Like, I want a little more of that levity because
you thought that was funny. The Back to the Future,
and Wolverine's reaction to it, being like, "Come on, kid, what are we doing here?" That was really played out. Like, the rhythm of it was very fun, and that sort of thing where it's like, I've been saying this all along with these one-shots, the fact that every time travel story, except this one, is like, we got to be really careful with time, and we're going to screw this up, and it's going to have the repercussions. And Miss Marvel literally at one point in this is like, whatever happened happened. I don't know what we changed. Let's keep going. We got to, like, what? What? That's not how time travel works in literally any piece of media ever.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do that, if it's going to be Miss Marvel destroys time in the Marvel universe, let's just go for it and do it and make it as insane as possible. So I'm hoping that's what happens in the next issue, but I guess we'll see.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Anyway, G.I. Joe number 9 from Skybound at Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andrea Milana, picking up on the last issue. The Baroness and Covergirl are in Paris. Baroness is there to visit her parents, but they are attacked by Baron Blood and a raptor, I want to say.
Yeah, raptor. Come on, bro.
Who has maybe the funniest origin possible in this issue. Where he's hysterical. Like, well, I liked birds, so I became one.
Yeah. And it's right. Major Blood, just so you're aware.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did he get a promotion?
Always.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Congrats. Pete, you're the Yo-Jo head. Yeah,
let me take it. Let me take it from here. Thank you. Solid cover, first off. This is just, I mean, you want to talk about childhood fun. This is just, you know, in your backyard in the sandbox playing with these characters. I'm having such a, I thought like Major Blood and Raptor versus Baroness and Covergirl is such a fun versus. This is tons of action. Oh shit, the last panel? I mean, what the fuck? Tune in next time. Oh my God. And I still wish they did. Like, I really think, Alex, they should just spend the last couple of panels just doing like a PSA. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
Like, you know, like, don't follow the Decepticons, kids. You know, something like that. Where, you know, they just
don't follow a Decepticon to a second location.
Nice one. Yeah, but I'm just having such a blast with this. I know you are like, these names mean nothing to me, but I still think this is fun.
Like, bit aside, what I like about this issue and what I like about this arc, you know, we do jump to some of the other characters at points of this issue, but I think focusing in on two of the Joes who couldn't be more different and figure out what the relationship is to each other is interesting. And I'm liking following Baroness and Covergirl and see how they work together and potentially against each other in this situation. A lot of it is very silly. Like, Raptor is very silly, but I mean, think
they're kind of winking at the camera at that.
But they're winking at the camera. Same with Major Blood is also a little ridiculous. Pete,
well, Major Blood's legit, so don't fucking mess with that one, okay?
Yeah,
he always has a patch and, you know, is still a marksman. So I do think, but just to kind of geek out a little bit, what's so cool about the Baroness and Covergirl is the Baroness is Cobra and Covergirl is Joe. And so this the kind of clash of these two in this kind of new world is very interesting. So,
but
it kind
Baroness,
of does,
just to clarify for anybody, is part of the Joes in this continuity.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's what's nice is if you're, you know, you can just walk in and just kind of enjoy this for what it is. But the old school kind of continuity adds a nice layer of like these two shouldn't be together at all, which is fun.
Now, Baroness is rich with dark hair and Covergirl seems nice and she has blonde hair. Do they need a red-haired Joe that they can fight over?
You talking about Scarlet, bro? Or are you talking about...
No, like a guy, like an... Well, it could be Scarlet. Is she a Archie-type character, would you say?
No, she's a Joe. And
is there a Joe who is like a Archie-type character?
I mean, a lot of them are. There's so many.
It's me, Redhead.
Oh, my God. That'd be hilarious. They've just given up. They're like, this guy's called Redhead. That's all. This one's Freckles. We're out of names.
I hate to tell you, Pete. I think they ran out of names almost immediately.
How dare you?
Robin and Batman, Jason Todd, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Dustin Nguyen. This is back in the day when Jason Todd was still Robin, per the title. And he is being tempted by a new vigilante on the scene named Wrath. Man, I love this book. Dustin Nguyen's art is always gorgeous. His watercolors are next level in this issue in particular. And this book is like sad. It's very sad because Bruce...
The ending hurts, bro.
Well, not even the ending, but just like Bruce being like, I don't know, did I do wrong? Should I be giving Jason back? Like, Bruce thinking about Jason almost like a foster puppy that he's taken in versus a boy, and everybody around him being like, what are you talking about? You can't do that. is just, it's upsetting, and it's meant to be upsetting, but it makes it for a very interesting read.
Also, Jeff Lemire is doing an interesting thing. We see Batman a lot of times as just this force of nature that gets knocked down and gets up again. And this...
You're never going to keep him dead.
Thank you. Oh, my God, dude, you are ridiculous. I just think that, like, having Batman stop and question, you know, is something we don't see a lot. You know what I mean? Of, like... maybe I shouldn't have tried to get this kid involved in this. And, you know, as someone who reads a lot of Batman comics, I was really surprised by the twist and what they're doing here. And I was like, oh, shit, this is sad and hurts. And, man, I hope things get better. You know, it's only issue two, so that the good news is it could. but, yeah, I just think the watercolors, it's definitely worth it for the art alone. But, yeah, they're doing a lot of big things in this, and it's in great hands.
Marvel Knights, The World to Come, number two for Marvel, written by Christopher Priest, art by Joe Quesada. There was a bomb drop at the end of the last issue that Black Panther may have been succeeded by a son who is white. And we get a lot more elaboration about how exactly that happened. There were some tricks and feints that we didn't know about in the last issue. So we find out who the son is, though, in fact... spoiler for the end, he has succeeded Black Panther for the throne. We're jumping around in time a whole lot here, particularly through the lens of Everett Ross and finding out more about his history. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
I don't know, man. Like, I think it's, you know, great art. I just feel like, you know, we had Captain America be a Nazi. And now we're going to have, you know, Black Panther be a white guy. I know we got to sell comics and we got to try ideas, but I don't know, man.
Well, this is certainly Priest being provocative, but he also comes up with a reason why it's happening. And I think, to specifically spoil it, it's not Black Panther's son. It's another baby who is adopted. So I don't know what the eventual point is here necessarily, because we haven't read the whole comic book. But I do think it's interesting, the idea of having...
I mean, we've read this whole comic book, but the
right,
next...
but we haven't read the series. What exactly Priest is saying in terms of him being a usurper and a co-opter, we're not sure yet. This is also very dense, as usual with a Priest book. Like, yeah. There's a lot going on at all times, a lot of history here, and wild swings, and things where it's like, oh, you probably remember that random issue of Black Panther when this happened. I'm going to tie into that here. So it's encyclopedic in a certain way as well. Yeah. But I will once again, like I did with the last issue, shout out Joe Quesada's art here, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, it's really great.
Richard Eisenhoff's colors, which are also cool, yes. Beautiful, great stuff. Dread the Hall H, number one from Image Comics, written by Jordan Hart and Chris Ryle, art by Chris Anderson, Nelson Danielle, Piotr Kowalski, and Jimmy Kusaj. This is an anthology of horror and horror-esque and comedy horror stories, all set around a Comic-Con that may be happening in a place called San Diego. Pete, you love this!
Yeah, first off, I mean, this is an emotional roller coaster, because I was like, oh, interesting cover. And then I looked at it more and I was like, oh, no, this hurts. I mean, a zombie is eating a graded comic. The comic is no longer maintaining that grade. It's just so sad. But then when I started reading this, I laughed out loud at this Comic-Con bit. And I just thought this, as someone who is supposed to be asking questions and sometimes just rambles on a guest and holds them hostage, I felt very seen. but I also just love this idea of keeping this going and cutting away and then coming back. And then I laughed. I thought, you know, we've seen a lot of comedy done well and interesting ideas and bits, but I just thought this was such a fun execution. I feel like it's also a fun side of nerd culture where, like, you know, people are who they are, and you put a microphone in front of them, and they're going to talk how they're going to talk, and it's kind of a fun thing and a slice of life. So I don't know. I thought this was a blast and really great art, and yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to happen next. And yeah,
I think this is just a one shot. So, but I really like this as well. I thought this was very funny, well constructed anthology with some great stories that tie very specifically into the con experience, the San Diego Comic-Con experience in particular. But creatively done. I like this team, but I was a little bit going into this being like, I don't know, this is going to be inside baseball.
Yeah.
But it's not. You know, they're riffing off things that happen at all cons, but it's packed with jokes throughout that'll appeal whether you have been to San Diego Comic-Con or not. But great stuff.
Yeah.
Superman Unlimited number 3 from DC Comics, written by Dan Slott, art by Rafael Albuquerque. This is taking place in the current continuity where kryptonite has been released all over the world. Superman has new gold powers. And in this issue, we are focusing in on Krypto and his relationship to Krypto, tying into a certain feature film that is now in theaters. I'm talking, of course, about Megan 2.0 because this presents the terror of Toyman. Pete, you love Krypto?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Krypto being the star from the movie here, it's nice to see him not getting beat. So this was a fun change of pace and a nice kind of tie into the movie, I felt like. Yeah, I mean, this is just classic Slott, a fun idea, well executed. Yeah, I just think that, this is just, I felt Dan Slott in this, and I feel like.
This is a good all-ages Dan Slott story. Yeah. I will say, given that we're on the third issue of this title, I thought this was a little weird to throw in here. It felt like a classic Dan Slott one-off one-shot when we've been following this new world of Kryptonite, which this ties into, certainly, and these new gold powers. But I want to see it go a little harder on that in the third issue, and here we took too much of a step back to focus on Krypto. Maybe that'll pay off through the series. I don't know. But
I think, the brass at DC said we can't just have one Krypto book come out after the movie where Krypto just gets fucked up. So,
yeah. Do you think they had a whole meeting where they're like, we're investing heavily in Krypto?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, listen, we shouldn't go all in on Krypto. And some people are like, I think we should. And it's like, man, yeah, you guys, come on.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, anyway.
Did you want to give us some financial advice real quick? Or
no,
should we move on?
I'm good.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to think of an NFTs joke, but I couldn't figure out what it stood for. Is my problem.
You didn't want to. I'm not going to. Okay.
No flying toy men. I don't know. Okay. Predator versus Spider-Man, number 4 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Marcelo Ferreira. This is the final issue of this story that really doesn't include Spider-Man a whole lot, to be honest. It's mostly Kraven versus a bunch of Predators and Mary Jane running away from a Predator and Spider-Man blowing up or not. But it is setting up a big thing that Benjamin Percy is building towards. We get the tease here that we're going to get Predator Kills the Marvel Universe. That's going to build on all the previous series that Benjamin Percy has done. Pete, what'd you think?
Well, this was exciting. I mean, a little bit of emotional roller coaster. I'll explain myself because this whole series they've been building up. Like, oh man, Kraven, there's all these Predators here, but Kraven's coming for him. Kraven's a hunter too, and it's like, oh shit, let's get this showdown. And I was so excited for it, and then finally we get it. Kraven in this issue takes down a Predator, and I was like, yes, but it's cut short. And then there's this really cool idea that kind of blew my mind, where the Predator recognizes that Kraven's a badass and is like, why don't you roll with me? And I'm like, oh, shit. Kraven's going to go up in the ship and learn to be a Predator? Oh, man, he's going to come back to Earth and fuck it the fuck up with all of his Predator buddies. Holy shit, this is crazy. Yeah, I couldn't believe they just fucking left it like that, where it's Kraven just walking to the Predator ship. I was like, oh, man. But great idea. I wish we could have got more I understand because of the kind of ending, but man, I would have loved, they built it up so much, like, oh, once Kraven gets here, mm-hmm. and he fights one Predator, and I was like, come on, dude.
But yeah, it's a bit of a bummer because the Wolverine series and even the Black Panther series felt more self-contained. This one didn't seem to care much about Spider-Man. It clearly seemed to be teeing up the next bigger series, and I agree with you. I think, like, what all three of us wanted, Justin obviously is not here this week, but I think what all three of us wanted was Kraven's last hunt, but with the Predator.
Yeah.
That would have been cool, but that's not what we got here.
Sick.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah,
give us a little bit of that before this cool
got
idea.
A Peter MJ kiss. How'd you feel about that,
Pete? Oh, my God. Thank you for reminding me. I was like, man, I got to turn into a Predator series to get the love story that I want, but I was very happy to see it.
Yeah. Ghost Pepper, number one from Image Comics by Ludo Lullaby. This takes place in an apocalyptic world where cooking and fighting happens, and it's very pretty to look at.
Hell yeah. I was really surprised because I was like, okay, Ghost Pepper. And then the lady makes one dish, and we're going to call it Ghost Pepper. But hey, it's the first issue. You know, I shouldn't judge.
Totally.
But yeah, I like this art very much. I feel like the action is good. I want to see what this is going to be about. So I feel like Image has enough credit with me that I will keep reading.
I couldn't really hook into the story at all on this one, which is a bummer. I was looking forward to this, but the images are really nice. And this is from an artist who is, I believe, stretching out to write as well. So I agree with you. I needed a little, I'm always in on all cooking, fighting stuff. And cooking. I needed more cooking and a little more story. And I don't know. Maybe I need to read this one again.
Or maybe in this next issue, it'll save it all.
We'll see. Wonder Woman number 23 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Daniel Samperi. We got a tease a couple of weeks ago that the baby Amazon, who was coming, not Trinity, but the other baby Amazon for the first issue, was in fact born, is with Etta Candy, and they're being held captive by Mouse Man, who's created a fascist state.
Man.
Here, Wonder Woman goes to find them and rescue them. And things are even weirder than you might expect. Pete.
Yeah. We got a first off, sweet cover. You got the old baby back. You know, you love
baby
a
back, baby back, baby back.
Exactly.
Yep.
And this mouse cult is awful. Oh, my God. This is hard to watch.
Mice have ears. Oh,
dude, don't even with that. That was so fucking creepy, dude. I was like, this is going on way too long.
For anybody who hasn't read it, the only thing they say on this island that's run by Mouse Man is Mouse Man knows and mice have ears over and over. It's really effective. That's the only dialogue they say over and over, and it is very unsettling throughout the book.
So unsettling. Batman, what the fuck are you doing? Wonder Woman says, hey, I got to go out on this solo mission, and you have the fucking gall to say no? That's all you do, bro, is say, hey, fuck off, Justice League. I'm doing my own thing, and then you have the balls to look at Wonder Woman and say, no, you can't go on your fucking solo mission? I couldn't believe that shit. It made me so mad.
I will say, to back you up, that was a little weird.
That was so out of character.
That the Justice League is like, I don't know, Wonder Woman, if you can go and do this thing that we do all the time.
Yeah.
It felt very
mannered.
It felt very much like, yes, we get it. We've been following Wonder Woman at odds with the U.S. government the entire time. Now she needs to be at odds with the Justice League as well. Like, they know she's going to do it, but I'm not quite sure why we needed that plot beat.
I was like, is this an act for somebody else that's watching? Because I didn't buy it at all.
Yeah.
But I do love Wonder Woman, and I definitely can't wait to see what's happening next.
Yeah. Great art as well. Daniel Samperi is fantastic. The New Avengers, number two from Marvel, written by Sam Humphries, art by Tone Lima. In this issue, this new, not exactly a team, is trying to stop the Killuminati, or evil clones who have been created from the Illuminati members. And by the end of the issue, the team is sort of assembled. They're going to recruit more members to take down the rogue Killuminati. One little thing that I'll say is I was okay with the first issue of this. The second issue, and I know you guys loved it, but the second issue, it really doubled down on the idea of, oh, we're doing what happened to the original New Avengers, which is this weird team that shouldn't be together, got together to stop a breakout from the raft. That's the exact same thing we're doing here. And I think that's okay. Like, that's okay to riff on that setup. If the team is like, why are we together? Why are we doing this stuff? All right, let's just go and see what happens. That's interesting to me.
Yeah, I thought this, first off, fun cover. I thought this was a funny issue. I liked Cleo Strange. There's calling this a collection of characters, a clown convention. I thought that was hilarious. And Doctor Strange being like, hey, the vibes are weird. And, he's like, what is it? Oh, man.
It's Guru Strange, the evil clone of Doctor Strange.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
that's all right.
I'm just, but yeah, just him talking about, don't let the haters steal your peace. Just hysterical stuff. That's just fun. It's fun writing. Weird last panel, but this is cool. More of this, please.
Blood and Thunder, number 3 from Skybound at Image Comics, written by Benito Sereno, art by EJ Hsu. There's a big alien convict that has escaped, and Blood, our human person, and Thunder, our gun, are going after him in this issue. It's mostly a big chase scene right up until the end. Lots of action here. Pete, you like action.
I do. I do love all this action. Also, cool cover. I'm excited that the gun and the girl are getting along and we're learning more about her. I mean, she could be a monster, which is a fun reveal. Yeah, cool stuff. I want to read more. I mean, I'm a little weirded out by this, the message of this, but I'm not trying to think about that. I'm just trying to have some fun.
Which message?
That, you should talk to your guns and act like they're a person, that kind of thing.
We live in the United States, Pete. Guns are more important than people. We protect guns' rights and let people die all the time. So.
That's true. That hurts when you word it like that.
It's true, though. Don't do that. Yeah. Death of the Silver Surfer, number 2 for Marvel, written by Greg Pak, art by Sumeet Kumar, per the title. We are leading up to the death of the Silver Surfer, but first, the tide is turning against aliens, and they are hunting the Silver Surfer, among other people, including Scar, son of Hulk. Meanwhile, our tech billionaire is drilling into the corpse of Galactus. By the way, this takes place in unspecified time in the future, I believe. Fantastic issue. As usual, Greg Pak has so much to say about the world we're living in while still making it very wildly entertaining. So really well done.
Yeah. Epic comic alert. Holy shit. This is awesome. First off, cool cover. I mean, oh my God. Cool last panel reveal too. Man, what a cool moment when you kind of realize that this douchebag could have just woken up, Silver Surfer's on a little vacation because, Galactus is dead or in a stasis or whatever. And this fucking rich douchebag, I can't believe he just shot that little guy. I love that little guy who's like, there's only death here, don't come. It was a warning,
Nice accent. Do you hear that accent in your head when you're reading it?
Yeah, I do. I play all my parts.
There's only death here. Hey.
It's kind of Mayor Quimby from Simpsons.
A little bit.
Yeah. Just a little, but yeah.
Do you hear voices for all the characters? Like, are they all doing little
you
accents?
Don't?
No.
Is it your voice reading all the parts? That's selfish, bro. That's selfish.
Huh. That is interesting. I never really thought about that. Yeah, I guess I don't hear different voices for them so much as intonations.
Huh. Weird.
Huh.
Yeah. We got to talk to Justin about this. Maybe we're just the crazy ones. But this is an epic tale that's brewing here, and I cannot wait to read it. Unbelievable art. Really interesting story. I was so moved by the Silver Surfer thing. Like, he's just trying to be nice, and humans are assholes. Oh, brutal.
Do you know what? Maybe that's not exactly true, because I know that, the
I've
voice...
Really thrown you
no, I think this is really interesting, because,
Do you X-Men. Do like Sue Storm's voice? Like, what are you doing? Like, is
no, I mean, I think like some of the voices are very generic, but Ben Grimm, for example, right. to use the Fantastic Four, like he has a voice to me. Like Ben Grimm is like, hey, I'm Ben Grimm. Yeah. I come from the streets in New York. Yeah, you know, like that's 100% Ben Grimm. Like he's Rocky and whatever. And I know because when I heard Eben Moss Backrack's voice in the trailer for the new Fantastic Four, I was like, that's not right. So clearly I have a thought on that. Huh. And I was going to say the X-Men, like the part of this is the accent.
Yeah, what's Kitty like, Pryde? What's
well, Kitty Pryde doesn't have a voice, but Gambit definitely is like when you hear Gambit on the X-Men cartoon, you're like, that is correct. And Rogue is correct. And Storm is correct. Wolverine is correct. Kitty Pryde,
do you do a Wolverine voice?
He's just like, read. Come on, bub.
Yeah, you can't just read it regular.
Yeah.
Come on.
Huh. Wow, you learn a new thing every podcast, I guess.
Yeah, all right.
Invincible Universe Battle Beast, number 3 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Ryan Ottley. In this issue, Battle Beast is still looking for a big battle, but his ship has betrayed him and sent him in the middle of an armada. Does that stop Battle Beast? Nope.
He can't really stop Battle Beast. Yeah. Badass cover. Oh, my God, this is so fun. I love the idea that the computer hates Battle Beast and is trying to kill him, but it's actually kind of helping him in a crazy way. This is such a fun idea that's so well executed. It's over the top. It's great. It's bloody and tons of action. And then kind of twist ending here. He's kind of in this Savage Land kind of world. So cannot wait to see what we're doing next. This is just a blast. This is over the top fun.
Yeah, they're just having a good time with this one. As much as I wish there was more emotional development for Battle Beast, we're not going to get that.
I don't want it.
It's not going to happen. So instead, this dude who used to be half eaten, the prince, I think, and the ship are providing a lot of good comedy on the side. It's just, they're having a good time. And Ryan Ottley just draws some great battle scenes.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Exceptional X-Men, number 11 from Marvel, written by Eva Ewing, art by Frederica Manson. In this issue, per the cover, the kids, the Exceptional X-Men kids, are teaming up with Ironheart. Kitty Pryde is pissed off at Bobby, and then some other stuff goes on with a tiny little portal in a bench.
I just heard, when you were talking, I heard the Bobby's voice from, oh my God, what was that
Bobby's
show?
World?
Bobby's World. No, that not one? That one. From Sweet Tooth. Bobby from Sweet
Bobby.
Tooth. Yeah.
Yeah, they're that's very similar.
When you talk, that's what I hear.
Bobby.
Anyways, this is fun. Great art. Love the brightness. It kind of sets such a cool vibe for this. You got to be careful for growing portals on the ground. I'm glad some comic is finally talking about it because it's a real problem. I also like the fun they're having with Riri here where she like shows up to save the day and then needs to be saved. That's fun. They're just having some fun.
Yeah, I like this. It makes sense to bring Ironheart in here. I will say there's a little bit, since there was a mixed reaction to the TV show, where it feels like another one of those appearances of like, Ironheart is here. You love Ironheart from the TV show. You didn't watch it? Okay. All right. That's fine. She's still here. And she is great. Like, she's a fun character. So it's fun to see her. But, like, it was definitely special guest star crossover episode when I wish there was maybe more of a reason for bringing her in.
Yeah. It's like, hey, just playing on the fact that there's a TV show out and we need to get a little something on it. So we're going to slide her right in.
Now, you want to see another media tie-in? We've got a book about beating a dog. Different publishers. I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Doug Wagner, art by Daniel Hilliard. Now, per the title, this is following a serial killer who is making people into skin suits and doing it very successfully. In this issue, her best friend ends up in a sticky situation. Not the blood sticky type, but another type of sticky situation, and she's going to go to rescue her. While the bodies are really piling up here,
my God.
You know, this issue is ridiculous. The other ones, I was like, I get the satire that you're doing here. This one, she
It all goes out the window on this one.
Skinless corpses just lying absolutely everywhere so quickly. It's crazy. Like, I think there's the thing that struck me in this issue, which has probably been going on all along, but like, there's a little bit of American Psycho going on in here, or maybe a lot of bit, where that book and movie are ludicrously satirical. And particularly if you read the book, there's a lot of it where you're like, is this really happening? I don't know if this is really happening, because I don't think this could actually, a person could actually do these things. And I think they're taking this here to an even bigger extreme. So I really still really like the art, and I'm still having fun with this book. But this is the one where it went from high school versus serial killer plot to something else entirely. And it's all right, but
yeah, this got a little too much. The art is amazing. Yeah, all the killing is just really upsetting. But don't get me wrong, I now have to root for her to kill the dude who's behind the human trafficking. But after that, I want her to stop, because this is just so fucked up. But yeah, they're leaning into that in a way that kind of suits this.
They are, fun. I think, since you brought up the human trafficking thing, I think, like, they're getting away from the fashion school part and leading too much into the serial killer part. And the thing that's interesting is the contrast between the two of those. So hopefully they get back to that before the end, but I guess we'll see. Eddie Brock Carnage, number 6 from Marvel, written by Charles Soule. Art by Jesus Saiz. Maybe this is a serial killer you can get more into, Pete. Because we got a couple of them in here. Eddie Brock is wrestling with Carnage symbiote, who now seems all in on helping him kill serial killers, but you should probably be suspicious of that. Meanwhile, Muse is somehow back alive and gunning for Carnage in the background. Pete, did this serial killer book strike you better than the previous serial killer book?
It sure did, buddy. And funny you should say that, because it seems like I have issues. But anyway, crazy cover and fun kind of justification of this cover. I thought this was like a great setup reveal. You know what I mean? Of like, well, this is a crazy cover. Then kind of later, Muse kind of reveals it. And I thought that worked really well. So I like this idea of building up this Carnage versus Muse showdown. I think that's a great idea. This is a cool story, great art. I'm excited for what's going to happen next.
I do have questions about how Muse is alive again. I wonder, sure. Particularly
comics?
Because the comics, yes. We last left him in hell, in Daredevil Unleash Hell. So hopefully there's going to be some backstory there. I guess we'll see. But otherwise, yeah, I really like this. The Carnage Eddie Brock relationship is really interesting. Good stuff.
I heard now that in hell, you just got to do a really good Borat impression and then you can get right out.
Oh, yeah. They love that.
Yeah.
Yes. I definitely feel like I'm in hell every time I hear Borat impressions. So agreed. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 10 from IDW, written by Jason Aaron, art by Juan Ferreira. Big issue here as the Turtle Brothers are finally back together, just in time to be put on trial for their lives. Pete, this is the moment you've been waiting for since the first issue.
So I got to tell you, This was a real emotional roller coaster for me. When they hugged, I just started bawling my eyes out. I couldn't believe, because they were so wrecked. They were this team that I was like, how are they going to get back together again? You know, and it lasted like 10 seconds before it all came crashing down. But I was just so excited because it was like, oh my God, he's not talking to a dead rat anymore. We're going to be fine. They're going to talk to each other. They're going to hug it out and work everything out. And then it just all went so bad. And then it went from like, oh, I'm not talking to this dead rat again, to I'm leading this courtroom because I have a dead rat in my suitcase who I'm listening
to. That was so funny. Him opening up his suitcase and be like, I'll take care of this. And there's a dead rat inside. If I ever end up in court, that is 100% what I'm doing. That's how I defend
myself. I wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend it.
I think I'm going to allow it.
Okay. Well, anyways, I'm so worried about our team, and I'm also so worried about the lawyer skills of, our skinny turtle buddy there. So, I'm just, Yeah, I went from like a ray of sunshine to no hope. But fun last panel reveal, Casey Jones, come on!
No, that's not Casey Jones. That's April in the hockey
Casey
basket.
Jones, yeah, she's going to be playing the part of Casey Jones.
Yeah, no, we've seen that over the past couple of issues. That was very cool. This comic book is killer every single time out. This is a fantastic all-timer Turtles run. Fascinating villain. Really curious to see what's going on there. All of the turtle stuff is great as well. I agree with you about April and Casey and everything. They're just building a really, really exciting world here. And the art's great. The writing's great. It's awesome.
Yeah.
To continue our Red Block, Red Coat number 13 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Brian Hitch, our titular Red Coat, whose name is Simon Pure, but he's anything but, as you'll soon discover, is teaming up with a guy named the Northerner, who is a time traveler who's trying to stop another time traveler from changing time so that the South and the North stayed separated at the end of the Civil War, which, as you imagine, can cause a couple of problems there. I really like this book. The art for Brian Hitch is always great. The time travel stuff is interesting. Like, this is definitely leading more and more into Jeff Johns as it goes. He's building up some crossover elements in his whole section of the Ghost Machine world. But I'm digging it.
Yeah, I like the kind of build up to the fun tease for the crossover event at the end. It's hard because it's like every time I'm like, okay, how's this? And each time this comic proves me wrong. It does such a good job of being creative and taking big swings and trying stuff. I am continually impressed by this comic. It's a great team, and I'm interested to see what's going to happen.
Deadpool Wolverine number 7 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Robert Gill. We had a big reveal the last issue that Strife isn't our ultimate bad guy. It's actually Apocalypse who is trying to come back through Strife's body by using zombies and bone dragons and a bunch of other stuff that's going on. And also Wolverine and Deadpool are two of his horsemen, and maybe Maverick is the third, unclear. And this issue we get more of that. Pete? Over to you.
Yeah, so fun cover, first off. And, this is tough because Apocalypse seems to be winning, so that's always tough. But, man, the Deadpool joke in here where he's talking, he's like, hey, good way to tell if it's really me is if I've made a butt joke in the last 5 minutes. If the answer is no, then it probably taint me.
Classic Deadpool.
Come on, that's classic Deadpool there. I mean,
here is, and I know this is one of the joys and trials of being a comic book fan, but I don't understand how this squares up with anything else that's happening in the world of the X-Men. And I don't just mean I don't just mean in terms of the partitionation of Deadpool and Wolverine. I mean specifically the inclusion of Apocalypse, who there's a whole ongoing plot where he's like, well, I'm leaving Earth forever for Mars. Goodbye. Yep. Now, Doug Ramsey Cipher, you are Revelation. You are the new Apocalypse. See you later. They're leading up to a whole event called Age of Revelation that is coming in October. How any of this squares up with
any of
that?
Hey, man, we're in July. You know what I mean? All right. You know what I mean? There's plenty of time.
Yeah. I feel like it won't, though.
It's definitely not going to. It's its own separate thing.
So that's something where I'm like, how does this work? When is this happening? What's going on here? And out of continuity?
Yeah.
Sure. That's fine. Art's good.
Art's great.
Benjamin, number 2 from OD Press, written by Ben H. Winters, art by Leo Max. If you want to find out more about this book, listen to our live show with Ben H. Winters, where we talked about this book a couple of weeks ago.
We should have talked about this book.
I know. We really messed up.
Yeah.
This is about a sci-fi author who is also named Ben, who died many years ago. Suddenly, he finds himself back alive. And in fact, he may be living through one of his own sci-fi plots, or perhaps more of them, because things get pretty trippy and wild by the end of this issue. Man, I love this. The art is so good. The story is just getting weirder and weirder and more interesting, but not forgetting about the humor inherent in it at the same time. I'm really liking this a lot.
Yeah, this is cool. A trippy cover, Tripped Out Comic. Awesome panels. I love the fun board game panels we got to get in the beginning. You know, like the questions of existence, what is real? I mean, this is great stuff. I mean, I'm very interested in these ideas and how this is going to kind of move forward. They do such a good job of kind of walking that balance. And yeah, geez, I mean, the art, geez, great.
Phantom Road, number 14 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. This is a flashback arc showing us what happens on this weird purgatory road and two investigators who are looking into it, leading to a big conflict that is teased at the end of this issue. Gabriel H. Walta art, Jeff Lemire writing weird. What's not to like about this?
Yeah, exactly. This continues to impress and creep me the fuck out. I mean, every time I think like, okay, I got an understanding of what's happening here. No, it goes to a whole nother level. And yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I love every time I see this in the stack. Yeah, Jeff Lemire is really kind of in his bag here. And this creepy bear that we kind of get as a little stuffed toy. I just like, it kind of reminds me of Ice Cream Man because we're looking at things and being like, oh, you know, but really impressive. Can't wait to see what happens next. And I'm super creeped out.
And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch.
Sure,
come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Hey, Justin, get out of the flood.
That's... sounds horrible for anybody who doesn't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Justin died.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.